Welcome to the Digitally Sick podcast.
Hi there, and welcome to another edition of Digitally Sick. It's a slightly different one today, so we don't have any guests, but I do have Faisal with me, as always. Hi, Faisal, how are you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad. I'm Alex Butler from Foundry 3.
Who?
Yeah, very true. So what are we here for today? So it's not going to be like some of the other pods we've been doing. It's actually come out of a couple of things. So we want to talk about virtual meetings and how you can run them, the principles that you can stick to do good virtual meetings and engage people properly, and some questions to ask yourself, I suppose, when you're preparing one, putting a strategy together, putting a meeting together and executing it. Now, the truth is that the reason we're doing this is because there's been a massive glut on LinkedIn and everywhere of people suddenly becoming experts in virtual meetings and suddenly becoming very interested in virtual meetings when they probably had other interests only a couple of months ago. And the truth is, it's not been the major focus of the work I've been doing either, but I think there was certain principles of what you need to focus on that are the same across any channel and for any strategic purpose. And I was watching a webinar that an agency was doing, which said gave you the how to overcome five challenges of digital communication, and it was literally like watching something that would have been bang average 10 years ago, going on about how the type of content you need. Did you know, Faisal, that email is a good way of reaching healthcare professionals? I don't know whether, Faisal, you knew that digital was quite a good means of communicating with people, or whether you've heard of that before. Totally missing some of the main challenges and getting lost on the things that aren't challenges. So, for example, taking your iPad detail and how to make that so that it's self-directed, on the internet, when one of the very, least reasons that a healthcare professional often saw a company representative was to see the marketing materials, and open rates for iPads are poor. So how that works, I don't know. But anyway, that's my rant over. But the thought was, well, okay, it's easy to criticise. What could we talk about and what could we share that was actually more useful? So, Faisal, does that make sense?
Yeah, you can rant as long as you want.
Run over.
It's amazing how the word digital has come back into fashion again.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I haven't heard multi-channel for a couple of months, or omni-channel, but digital's come back in fashion.
I know. I mean, the jargon does get in the way, really, of a clear strategy, I think, professionals and other stakeholders through digital channels. Whereas, ironically, of course, that's not really the challenge. Not long ago, virtual events were chosen either to add value to a meeting, as in offering a live web stream or recording video so that it can be used, viewed afterwards, or because it was a compromise, or because there was no other choice. Never as a first option, because it's the best opportunity to actually provide real value to people. There's loads and loads of different types of technology you can use, some really, really good collaborative tools, kind of peer-to-peer tools, great, web hosting, slide hosting, video hosting. So that isn't the challenge. The challenge, in my opinion, is actually understanding how you can provide real value to people. In an online setting.
Yeah, definitely. It's quite amazing how people still think that. I mean, I've had numerous conversations recently, and there's people still talking about the tech of these. I think the tech. I mean, and it's quite. I don't think the tech is the conversation, because if you're dealing with a pharma company or you're dealing with a Congress organizer, the tech's already sorted, or the tech's an IT issue.
It's the least interesting thing. And what the fallout is when you do focus on the technology is exactly what I said about how we put our iPad detail into a self-directed environment. Well, bad idea, I'm afraid, because, there are some people at some periods, you have a first disease modifying therapy and, in an area that's never had one before or whatever, sometimes people will want to. But even then, I would suggest that healthcare professionals would rather look at less biased marketing materials that help them understand how to integrate a new medicine into their current practice than, some hand-picked bar charts and graphs. I mean, it's just, so what's the value in that channel? So I think we both agreed on that one. That if you're focusing on the tech, if you think that that's solving the problem, then you might unfortunately not get what you want out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's stop focusing on tech and stop retrofitting. Obviously, some of that data is useful if needed, but actually focus on, I mean, how much time someone's got. Do you see? I mean, it's how much time they have, what mood they're in, the psychology. I mean, it's all down to obviously thinking about the user and then like working out the best plan for them.
Exactly. And yeah. another thing, so I suppose point number two, is that, you know, I've also heard a word that I hate even more than many other of the jargon that you hear, and that's digitizing things. You know, so let's digitize our content. And basically, if you try to produce replica content for offline experiences, it virtually always won't work. Digital replica content doesn't work. You cannot and you shouldn't try to replicate or digitize offline experiences. It's about adding enhanced value and providing, you know, real engagement and support for somebody in a non-digital environment. And by that I mean is if you're taking the central core of what you're trying to achieve, the central conversion value that you're trying to achieve with your stakeholders, customers, whoever it might be, and then making sure that that is something that they can get real value from online, then that's fine. But what it normally is how do we take content we currently have and change it so that it might work digitally? And broadly speaking, it doesn't. So I don't know what you think about that, Fizer, whether you're in agreement with that.
I mean, I don't like to agree with you.
you don't have to.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that content is valuable. So it's just a matter of not retrofit. It's just not retrofitting, is it? It's just using that, as you said, it's using the right platform. It's not just taking it and thinking, oh, that's going to do exactly the same thing. I mean, what's the Einstein quote? Doing the same thing.
Seen that enough time on LinkedIn. To be more specific, so people can understand what I mean. So, for example, heard people saying, you know, that say in medical communications, content's often very scientific, often, you know, very complicated, and often there's a lot of it, and therefore you need to simplify it. And I've heard people say, so you need to do things, and this is like really basic stuff, like, you know, you need to put what's important at the top. And it's like, well, you mean like an abstract for a clinical paper, because that's what they do already. But the point is, that's not really changing the value exchange for a piece of data. What healthcare professionals say time and again is that they're very interested in data, but it has to be clinically relevant and practical. And therefore, you know, producing interactive content where people can explore the data, ask questions of the data. It can be, you know, highly visualized. So it's not dumbing down the experience, but it's taking what would be a relatively dry experience of trying to read through content and turning it into something where you can solve problems and people can ask questions of it. Yeah. That's harder to do, of course, and takes investment and takes a, you know, real kind of driven strategy. Just getting an agent to change the copy around, not so much. But and you'll get out of it what you put into it, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it's all as you said, it's all down to like thinking about the platform, because a lot of people are talking like, right, it's online now, let's have a 3D conference booth and VR experience within this congress. And you're thinking, well, if you look at the bandwidth of what's happening out there, like if you look at every tech company, like down to Netflix, every streaming company has lowered its bandwidth. There's a reason why that.
Do you know what? It's so true.
It's just typical stuff, isn't it? It's like... Mm. It's not rocket science. It's just common sense. There's different times of the day people where bandwidth goes massively up, where you shouldn't be doing any of the like heavy video calling and stuff like that. There's so much nuances to it, and it's just being clever with it. It's like, I don't know if you know. So with streaming services, it's quite interesting. Obviously, this is a bit off topic, but I think it's relevant in how this company thinks. So if you look at online streaming services, a lot of platforms, when I log on to a video platform, most video platforms I log on, connect to obviously my ISP, connect to the website, and then the website platform then connects to their ISP, and you've got all these different transactions going on. Netflix is so clever. Years and years and years ago, when they first started, they actually put their servers within the ISP servers or within the same building. So you don't have to go to two or three different connection points. You go one straight connection point. And then what obviously happens is your streaming is a lot quicker. Do you see what I mean? It's
so you're totally you're solving a tech problem.
No, but you're solving it's a tech problem, but it's a human problem.
I get what you're saying.
How do we make it as frictionless as possible and the best experience? And that's worked for them.
But if you go back though, Baz, just a step, talking about virtual booths. So what people need to understand is that pharmaceutical companies, it's been my entire career, and I think the value that we add to society and the value we can add to all of the stakeholders, healthcare professionals, patients, patient organizations and advocacy groups, researchers, academia, just you name it, we can add real value. But a booth at a congress, if you ask healthcare professionals why they're at a congress, and this has been done a few times on a vast scale, as in thousands of doctors, they'll mention getting their continual medical education, their professional development. They'll mention keeping up to speed with best practice, networking with colleagues, if they're presenting a poster or on stage, kind of putting themselves in the spotlight, moving their career on. They'll talk about going out for drinks and having a good time somewhere. How often do you think they talk about visiting the pharmaceutical company booth? So people realize that they, in a company, in that environment, you're the advert that you're waiting to skip on YouTube. So why would you do a virtual reality booth? Now, my point is, does that mean you can't take some of the really cool content that you would have on a booth and some of the high value stuff and make it so it works? Yes, absolutely. But my point, that's exactly what I meant when if your starting point is to digitize an offline experience. If you want to take an offline experience that people really, really get value from a pharma company, don't start at a booth, because they don't. They might go in there because they know someone from the company and they want to say hello, or they feel they should, or they want a coffee, or they want a goodie bag, or, occasionally, of course, they do want data and information, or there's, presentation taking place from the stand or whatever. There are reasons, but so I'm not being completely dismissive, but seriously, I don't believe that that's the value you're going to add is by replicating something that is not in the top 10 of value exchanges that someone would get from a congress.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the key thing is what you mentioned is in that research is obviously to basically get more information, get more data and stuff. If you take those key elements, obviously missing out the drinks bit, those key elements can live online, offline, or in any world you want to, even in Fortnite. But do you see what I mean? It's like the key thing is that they obviously want more education. They want to know more data. What was the other key points you mentioned?
Well, this it's off the top of my head, but it's continuing medical education. I think it's number two in the Congress is seen as number two as a way people get the latest innovations and best practice and stuff.
Yeah.
There are, of course, healthcare professionals that don't like congresses and conferences and don't go to them.
Yeah, and a lot don't go, and we've seen that data as well. But if you're doing virtual congresses, medical congresses, is take those two, three points as continual enhancement, learning new innovations, new drugs that may be coming out, or new indications, or whatever it may be, that type of educational stuff, and then work backwards, because that's what they need. Those needs will never change.
And I will come on to how I think you can do that. Yeah. Talk about it later, but I agree. Another thing, I didn't mean to cut across you.
Yeah, I was just saying, is there a magic trick?
No, and of course, like everything in this world, it's important that there isn't a magic trick.
Yeah.
Because, a lot of people do promise to pull a big bunny out of a hat for people, don't they? But it's like everything, and I think this next point is exactly that you've got to have a truly deep understanding and insight into the audience on a digital environment, because it can feel pretty brutal. Because people won't come to your meeting if they don't find it interesting. If they're there and it's not interesting for 20 seconds, 30 seconds, they'll leave. Of course people walk out of congresses in real life, but it's a lot harder to do so. And also, you're there for that particular reason of being at the congress, being at the conference, being at the meeting. If you're online, you'll probably be doing other things still. within your job, both professionally and your life.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless you truly understand what the audience wants from you, and more importantly, what they will find of value, understand their attitudes and beliefs in details and their personal lifestyle and professional kind of challenges and stuff, you're not going to be able to provide that value exchange that is absolutely essential. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not suggesting that out of an audience of 1,000, you need to know every individual and every individual's personal and professional life. The point is, what can you add that's of enhanced value in this environment? And then how do you deliver that in a way that people really want to have it delivered to them? Another thing that doctors say that they love, or healthcare professionals really like, is case studies and peer-to-peer. So, you know, how do you deliver through the things that people want to have rather than someone just delivering a set of slides? Do you allow consistent conversation during the meeting? How do you involve voting and surveys? How do you make it personalized? You know, all of these things are the challenges, you know, in a way, not the technology.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you mentioned, obviously, and we've had chats about this, obviously, before and for many years and stuff, but obviously content's the key, isn't it?
And that's going to be, we're going to come on to that. You're absolutely right, 100%. Yeah. And in fact, you know, there are some phrases that are used all of the time that people either don't bother to explain what they mean, or maybe they can't explain what they exactly mean. One of them is engagement. It's become so part of the lexicon, that people just assume that other people know what that means, or maybe they don't even interrogate themselves what they mean by that. Obviously, everyone can have metrics of how many people you get there, how long they listen for, or, you know, other, you know, things that you can measure. But I don't know how you describe it, but I've always, probably imperfectly, but I've always described it as essentially three things, really, which is either informing someone of something that they find highly valuable, entertaining them, or often in the case of pharma and healthcare professionals, especially, solving a problem for people, how you make their professional life better, how do they improve their patient, their provision of care to patients, how do they make something more efficient within their clinic, do you know what I mean? How do they make do something better? Now, if you can inform, entertain, and solve a problem at the same time, then that's fantastic. But that's what I believe is an engagement in my world. If you're doing those things, then you can forget it.
And I think you, right now, and obviously in the future, I think you just have to do it with empathy as well. It's because it's like, right, when we say content, we just don't mean let's do an email. Do you see what I mean? There's other ways to get content out there and stuff like that. But just be empathetic, because at the moment, if we start spamming HCPs with emails and stuff, they just don't have time. They've got bigger, more important things to think about at the moment.
Absolutely right. In fact, in that meeting,
think about your empathy.
Yeah, in that webinar that I was talking about at the beginning, we were told that healthcare professionals really like email. I mean, I've never heard something, well, I have heard things more ridiculous, but it literally is ridiculous. If a healthcare professional gets an email that meets a personal need of theirs, is giving them the chance to get some further information that they would find valuable for themselves, or helping them solve a problem, then they might like that email. But who in the world says to somebody, who in their own life would say, oh, I really like email? I mean, it completely depends on what it is. And this is my point, that, you know, these things can, the veneer on the top of some of these things can sound like you're really giving someone some advice. But any kind of interrogation of it makes you realize that there's no advice there whatsoever.
There's nothing wrong against email. It's just, I think the key point is that empathy. Think about, don't spam them. Don't spam them. Just don't harass them. Think about their day. Do you see what I mean? What's their day looking like at the moment? And then how you can support them in various ways.
Well, I would think about it as emailing a colleague. In that sense of, why would you email them? If you know them really well, you might email them something funny or entertaining. You have to sometimes email information that somebody needs, and I'm talking about good emails here, because we all get loads of corporate ones that aren't good. Or you might send them something that you think that might help them solve a problem for themselves.
Yeah.
And but you know, if you're sending an email that doesn't do any of those things, or quite frankly, from the perspective of the receiver, of course, not from the perspective of the sender. You know, anyone can send information because they would like someone to know something. Doesn't mean to say that they want to know it.
Yeah.
Or it's valuable to them. You have to be brutal, and that's the whole point of a deep understanding of the audience. It enables you to be brutal about saying, no, somebody does not want to receive this. How can we do it in a way that they would want to receive it and find it valuable?
Yeah. And some might, but I've never I think I did my first email campaign probably what, 2006, 2007, and I've never heard someone say, I love email.
Suppose that we're told that doctors really like email. And, you know, fine. I mean, I don't know what data you're using for that. But, you know, when something's valuable, of course you want it to do email. But you know, to me, it's that kind of thing, steer away from it. And it's loaded to it, Fies, so let's go back to it. You know, putting percentage things on something is probably not helpful, but I say it anyway, so I'm not going to duck out of it. But I would say that like digital is 95% engaging content, based on how I defined engagement earlier. You know, competing for people's time and attention, really hard. Unless you are providing real value, then you can forget it. And as I said, it's value from the perspective of the person you're trying to engage with, not from what you think's valuable. I mean, if you wanted to say anything more about that.
On your percentage, or I don't know if I agree with your 95, but it depends what you're doing, isn't it? I mean, but a lot of it is content. I mean, it is, there's a massive stat, and that's what people want, it and they want to engage in it in the right way.
When I say 95%, I mean 95% of success, because you can invest a lot of money in multi-channel, omni-channel strategies, God forbid, using those things. You can invest lots of money in a social media strategy. You can invest lots of money in loads of things. But unless you have the content at the heart of it, whether it be the, you know, engaging, entertaining content or informing content or tools and services, problem-solving content, then, you know, I don't think you have an engagement strategy.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's why I have it at 95%. I mean, the percentage doesn't really matter. I think the major point I think here is that it's not, again, like I said earlier, about just taking what you currently do and trying to make it digital. I think you need a fresh strategy, which actually probably includes a new content strategy in order to be successful.
And test it as well. I mean, that's the amount of times I just... And the amount of grey hairs I've got over people that just don't look at the analytics on the content, just don't test the content.
Carry on.
Yeah, it's amazing how, I mean, that's probably 95% of the conversations I've had is, well, no, we haven't looked at the analytics. Well, you need to look at the analytics, because just putting it out there isn't relevant. I mean, you know, because it might have 1,000 likes or engagements, or might lead to a call to action, or it might have zero.
It's interesting where language comes into play here. So I have a pyramid model, which I've designed. I say designed, I mean, people have these models of their own. There's loads of them, so I'm not suggesting any kind of massive intellectual property over it. But the model I have is basically a three-tiered pyramid, with at the top a conversion measure, which I have as something that somebody does that has real value to them in the context of what we've already said about the information or a service or a tool or something that is really valuable to them that you can measure behaviorally offline, and it's also a value to you. And then underneath that, I have contributory measures, things that contribute to someone doing that, and then just other indicators, things you can measure. I saw someone take one of those types of models and change the kind of contributory measure to a, I won't say what it is because it might give away who it is, but to a measure which is based around really kind of a guiding thing, that thing that the company find the most important. And when you do that, you've already changed the measurement strategy, because it's not about what you want as an organization. It's about what value you can provide for your audience that also has value for you. So if you even subtly change that out, conversions might sound boring, but when done properly, they're not boring. That's the whole point. If you change that out so that it's actually about what you're really bothered about, you're never going to have a measurement strategy that works, and it won't inform a content and engagement strategy that works either. So yeah, so totally take that on board.
I mean, if you've got any, obviously you can't say the companies, but if you've got any good examples of doing congresses digitally that has worked really well, or have you seen anything out there which worked really well?
I can't say it's a good question. I can't say who they are, but my I think congresses need to be very, very specific with regard to the value that they're driving for people. So if we're not taking very big congresses, let's just take a small, you know, what would be a medical meeting or something that you organise, you need to now think about essentially what you would think about within a normal kind of online campaign. So you need to think about how people find you, how they discover you. And that means because you literally tell them about the meeting because you've got a good relationship with them face to face. Or it could be through email, it could be through social media, it could be through other content strategy. Point is, how do they find you exist? What experience are you going to offer people? And I've seen people give good experiences around very specific things about how to apply a new piece of data in rare disease, for instance, or how to measure quality of life differently within a rare disease setting. What the experience is, what it is that central piece of value. So, for example, in things where I've seen it done well, people go away with a new tool or service, or go away with a new best practice for their clinic, which is a value to the organisation organising the meeting and also to the people attending. And then also the other thing to think about is how you make it so that people want to come back, and how you build loyalty and how you do build advocacy. Now, there's live meeting environments where you can also do collaboration and networking and peer-to-peer and, you know, real-time immersive case studies, which is really cool. And obviously you want to have banks of content that people can come in and personalize a Congress experience, which isn't live. So you can do it well, but to be really blunt, I've not really seen it done very well by pharma that often, if I'm honest. But that's not pharma's fault, because they've not had to, for a start. And secondly, I think, like we said, often the advice and the strategy isn't there. But it's incredibly clever and good people in pharma, so they would be able to do great meetings. It wouldn't take much.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just looking at the whole what's available to you at the moment as well, I think, and just utilizing that properly.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different platforms and tools and digital tactics available. I think it's important as well. It's hard to... I don't know, it'd be really great to see a really good case study on it.
Well, I'd like to do one.
I think after this, obviously during this period, I think. And when we spoke to Paul as well, I mean...
Oh, Paul Sims, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, Paul Sims, just before he went live as well with his...
Eye for Pharma.
Pharma in Barcelona. It'd be great to get him back and see what the results were, what the issues were. How it all went as well, because obviously that was quite an interesting podcast we did with him.
I totally agree. I mean, one of the things that I think, you know, to finish this off, is to think about why a healthcare professional attends a congress or meeting. We touched on it before, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, getting new clinical information, keeping up with trends, all that stuff, continual medical education, which we know about, I suppose what more thing about professional networking, materials for personal knowledge. Well, there's lots of different things off the top of my head. I wish I'd written them all down now from the study. I think the major point is, and you say, you know, have I seen what's good practice? In working with medics, medical schools, and congresses in the US and in the UK specifically, but also across Europe, I think there are, you know, a few things that people can have as a kind of, how could I put it? Not a checklist, because I don't think it's a checklist type of experience, but as a ways of thinking whether you're probably adding real value to people. So one of the things was, you know, personalization. I mean, you can now, to some extent live, and very much so in a non-live environment for a congress, provide a really personalized experience for people. And I think, you know, people should really think carefully about that. I said before about the data, you know, from yes, clinical data is important, and people do want to understand the latest either readout of data or, you know, whatever it might be. But they always say as well that they want it to be clinically relevant, and that also in, so it can be interrogated for their particular interest or their particular clinical practice. And we mentioned the case studies before as well. I mean, again, you can do really cool immersive case studies as a collaborative virtual experience, which is really, really good, where you have voting on what people should do, you know, outcomes, discussion of outcomes, people putting forward their perspectives with regards to the data they would use or their clinical experiences. You can do really cool case study stuff, peer-to-peer, allowing people to talk. And like I said, the tools and services part, it sounds really dull, but actually it really isn't. I mean, people are always looking for new things that they can use to help them improve their practice. And it's a good way of showcasing that, showing people how to use something, for example, or getting someone to show people how to use a new tool or a new digital health intervention or whatever it might be. And so, I mean, there's those kind of things. I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add as well, Fies, to that, or say about it, if not add.
Yeah, I was just thinking about a couple of points. I've got a point, just a thought on content, and then a thought on actually at the moment we should really do like a design thinking case study on this. And I think design thinking is really important. Obviously, it's because if we have that ethnography study, if we do those studies of what's going on, what people want, and those studies have a lot of empathy in it as well. And I think thinking about empathy and how we design congresses around that, or virtual congresses and contacting doctors at the moment, is really important. There's another key thing, I don't know if you've come across it as well, but there's like your pyramid. Google's got a pyramid as well. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's called Hero Hub and Hygiene. And they really push that model. And it's quite interesting because you can take that model and use it for pharma, and it works quite well as well. And that's an interesting model to look at.
I always find that models really are frameworks for just doing things better. I mean, the models are just a jumping off point and also a boundary to make sure that you don't, you know, do things wrong, so to speak, which sounds a bit more draconian than I mean it. But you know, the models themselves often don't matter as much as just instilling a different process.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I think that Hero Hub Hygiene content creation or content marketing model is interesting. The funny thing is, though, so if you look at any, so I've worked at a few startups, and obviously client side and agency side, people do like models a lot. At startup culture, you don't have that model in the beginning because you're actually creating new territory.
Well, my startups did, because I wrote.
But you're I'm talking about tech startups.
No, I know. I'm only joking.
Yeah. But they are based on models now. I mean, there's loads of models developed on work we did, but we didn't have a model to start with. It was like test, learn, scale the good stuff. Do you see what I mean?
Of course do, yeah. I mean, I've done three startups now myself. I know exactly what you mean. So to finish this off, first of all, I think it's a massive opportunity, virtual meetings now, and I think that we will not go back to how it was before. I think it's really exciting that we can now maybe build upon this, not on this discussion, but build upon the opportunity and the visibility that these meetings have, because hopefully there'll always be face-to-face meetings. It'd be a pretty horrible world to think about where we don't. But what is great is to think about the large-scale collaboration and exchange of value we could get from running really, really good virtual meetings from the pharma industry. And I suppose the thing that I would just ask people to think about is, first of all, make sure that you get the value exchange right, as in what actually are you providing of real value to someone when they come along? And, of course, that has to be mutual, for valuable for you as well, but it has to be primarily valuable for the person attending. And then the final thing, you know, as I suppose to think about from, I think, is rather than how do we try and make this as good as an offline meeting, or how do we get away with it, or how do we get around this compromise, come at it from a completely different angle. Come at it from the angle of how can we use the technology to provide content and experiences that are actually of enhanced value. that are better than that meeting could have been in an offline face-to-face environment. Because you can do different things face-to-face that you can't do online. Although in these times of lockdown, people seem to be doing everything through Zoom, which we probably shouldn't discuss. That's my take, is that actually, how do we make this enhanced? How do we make this better?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now,
and keeping it simple as well. Don't forget enhanced. I just want to say, if anyone is listening, enhanced doesn't mean like a 3D Congress booth.
It most definitely doesn't mean a 3D Congress
booth. Yeah, which we remember Second Life, when Second Life first launched, what, many, many moons ago. It was like so clunky.
Everyone was going to be going to Congress in Second Life, weren't they, as a superhero?
Yeah, the thing of just like keeping it as simple as possible and as frictionless experience for the HCP.
And you know, and this is the thing, so you know, just so people don't misunderstand me, when I said don't make a booth virtual because people don't like booths, my point is people like good booths, you know, but is what makes a booth really good something that can be translated into a digital environment? To your point, does someone really want to take a virtual reality trip around the Congress booth? And anyway, how many people have a VR headset? So, you know, it's more a case of what is really good about the booth and how can we turn that into an experience which isn't like a booth but takes those really good experiences and actually enables them in an online environment as well. You can't shake someone's hand in, you know, digital. You can't get a coffee. You can't sit down and casually chat. But you can take some of the really great experiences of a booth and make them into a really good digital experience. But, yeah, exactly, Fies. Enhanced means better value, greater value, not complicated and over the top, because it's not always necessary. Right. I think people, I think I need to get a glass of wine or something. I'm passionate about this, but
maybe some whiskey.
No, I know it's too early. Nobody wants to know, but it's actually 6 o'clock on a Monday. Beautiful sunshine outside still in the UK, but apart from going for a run, can't access it. So maybe I've my lockdown situation has maybe become even more passionate than normal. But anyway, thank you very much for listening and keeping listening to the end if you have done. Obviously, if you've got any questions or thoughts or want to speak about this, then please reach out to either me or Fies or both of us. We can be contacted in the usual places. If you do like the pod, then please comment and please say you like us. rate us, I'm trying to think of the right word. Also, there's a LinkedIn group for Digitally Sick, which you can join as well. So please do that. Other than that, hope you found this of some value. We look forward to speaking to you again soon. So it's from me, Alex, and you, Fies.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Speak to you again soon.